This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The local food movement has been growing in recent years. Consumers have been going to farmers markets looking for the freshest produce. Other more intrepid individuals have sought out local farmers for meats. All of this helps small farmers. It helps the local economy. It reconnects consumers with their food sources. And to a certain degree, it helps the environment. It also provides the freshest, most nutritious food possible for your table. But there is one product category that would you'd presume that you'd want to be the freshest of all, dairy. But getting local dairy products isn't always easy. Yes, there are local dairy farms, but they usually sell their products to larger commercial concerns before the milk they produce reaches you. In fact, there are regulations, as I understand it, in place that make it difficult for local dairy farmers to connect to you in ways that, for instance, vegetable growers can. Well, today we explore the policies that regulate the dairy industry and the push by local farmers to get their milk and other products directly to you. We are joined by Chester Lauder, Livestock Director for the North Carolina Farm Bureau. He represents the Bureau on Dairy, Cattle, Swine, and other livestock issues at the state and national level, and also assists with many environmental issues associated with farming. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, sir.
Nice to have you with us. Jim Price is the president and owner of Lakeview Farms. That's a milk and dairy delivery company in Fort Mill, South Carolina, which we're going to talk fairly extensively about this morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good to see you. And Charlie Payne is the owner of Harmony Organics Dairy Farm in North Iredell County. Getting into farming was a conscious decision for Mr. Payne. He graduated from Cornell and worked for an agricultural finance company, and he and his father bought the farm in 1979. And there's been no looking back?
No.
There was a
Only
pause.
Looking forward.
A dramatic pause. Was it a good decision, getting into farming?
I guess there are some intrinsic values that are pretty important to me. I met my wife after I moved here, and we've got three daughters that we're very proud of, and we've enjoyed a pretty good lifestyle over the years. But we, from a business standpoint, probably not. I have a friend who likes to poke fun at me who says I hit the dairy business pretty much at the top and rode it plumb to the bottom.
The dairy business is having a tough time. Yes. Why? Everybody buys milk. Everybody, if you open a refrigerator in America, it's going to have milk in it, or ice cream. So everybody buys dairy. Why is it such a tough business right now?
Volatility of the price. Supply is the key. If you have one extra load of milk, you end up with depressed prices. That's an overstatement as by just saying one load, but you don't turn the spigot on and off on dairy cows. Dairy cows, you gear up for that production, and you just don't turn her off for a day and not milk her for a day right. To relieve that extra supply of milk.
Well, let me ask a question about this, because I mean, is the demand for milk products fairly steady?
Yes.
Does the production of milk products vary greatly from day to day, month to month, season to season? I mean, isn't the output of a cow pretty much the same every day, or am I completely off base here?
No, not entirely. Milk production varies somewhat by season. In the hotter summer months, cows are a little bit more stressed by weather, and they don't typically produce as much milk. The reproductive cycles of cows, of course, a cow has to have a calf every 12 months in order to renew her productive cycle, or milk productive cycle, so that their reproductive performance is better in the cooler months of the year, and so they start new lactations usually generally in the fall and winter months.
But is the cycle fairly the same from year to year? You know what's going to happen in each season of the year?
It is pretty similar from year to year.
So given that we have a steady demand for dairy products and we have a fairly routine cycle of output, why is it tough to make ends meet?
Well, mainly because producers typically try to produce more milk when milk supply is a little bit shorter and the price is higher. Mm-hmm. Generally, the reaction is an overreaction. It oversupplies the market, which then forces prices down. So all dairy farmers are in a free enterprise system where anybody can produce as much or as little as they want to, and typically the industry is big enough where it overreacts most of the time.
And Jim Price, even though you're concerned, your business is called Lakeview Farms, you are not a farm. You don't have cows, as I understand it. You buy milk and distribute it, correct?
Well, not exactly. At one point in time, that was our philosophy and also our position. But since that time, because of the thing that these folks have been talking about, the market itself, and our demographic, who is about 33 years old with 2.3 children, is our market. Mm-hmm. And those people think green, and that's who we sell product to, the people that are conscious about wanting quality product and wanting to know where it came from.
Right.
Do you own the cows? Can I go see the cows? Can I see the farm? Can I see the bottling? And they want to connect that cow to their porch. So that's what we've been able to do through getting involved in owning cows, getting involved in processing milk ourselves. And so we've made a conversion to that simply by putting a team of folks together who really know how to handle and produce milk through Bush River Farms dairies out of Newberry. Mm-hmm. Also the Peeler family with years and years of experience in processing. And then, of course, our recent success in making home delivery something available in the Charlotte market.
Right.
So compiling all those three together, we were just talking earlier about it's almost impossible for one person to be able to do all that.
Right.
So the ability to put together a team of folks with professional experience in all those with farming, producing, processing and marketing is a pretty good team.
So you're on the input and the output side.
Yes,
of
at this time we are. Yeah.
Which is the tougher part of the business?
The marketing.
Really?
Convincing, educating people about true value and wholesome products.
Mm-hmm.
That's the education part of home delivery is tough. I say that simply because I'm not milking cows every day. Now, these guys out there milking cows and growing feed and those things, it's tough physical work.
Right.
And it's hard. But on my side of it is convincing and educating the people of Charlotte market and the surrounding area the value of true, wholesome, all-natural products.
Now, Mr. Payne has, as I understand it, 90 cows. Is that right, about 90 cows?
We're milking about 90 cows, and we have closer to 100 cows in total.
Okay.
And we have young stock in addition to that.
Plus 250 acres of pasture and cropland. How does that operation compare to most operations in North and South Carolina?
The average size dairy operation in North Carolina is approximately 180 cows. Acreage-wise can vary from, say, 250 acres to 500 or 600 acres. There's not a set right. number of acres that go necessarily with a dairy operation. It depends on their mix of getting inputs to feed those cows. They may have neighbors that they buy feed from. It's usually a industry within itself, within a community. And so it's a vital part of that community also because it provides jobs and resources and use of facilities within that area.
And how many dairy farms do we have in these two states? Or at least, I know you're in North
in
Carolina.
In North Carolina, we have today 295 grade A dairies.
What does that mean, grade A? Is there a grade B and would I want to drink it?
No.
Definitely not.
So normally grade B would be or manufacturing milk would be going into manufacturing.
It
would
meaning what?
Cheese,
and other products that are highly more processed.
So there are grade B farms and grade A farms.
Well,
and what makes the grade?
The difference is that grade A farms are inspected by federal and state sanitarians.
Okay.
On a quarterly basis, well, the state is quarterly and the federal is annual.
Right.
And grade B farms don't, and there are very, very few. I don't know if there are any
they're
still
in North Carolina. I think there are about 20 what we call farmsteads, and most of those may be into artesian-type cheeses.
Mm-hmm.
And they do have, refinement of their product, and they do on-farm processing in a lot of those cases to produce a product, if you will, where it be a cheese or a other product.
I read that North Carolina Class 1 milk is that grade A or is that something different, class 1
grade
versus
A.
grade A? Okay.
In other words, all grade A milk is is eligible for the fluid consumption. Grade B milk is not.
Okay.
Can't be.
So I read that the North Carolina Class 1 milk production was approximately 107,126,655 gallons. How many cows, how many farms does it take to produce that enormous amount of liquid? That's enormous to me.
Well, I don't know the number of cows.
Currently, North Carolina has about 46,000 dairy cows.
Okay.
That's what you'll get from NAS, National Agriculture Statistics Service.
Okay.
So, and they, we produce about 50% of our fluid market in North Carolina. So the other 50% is being brought in from other states.
How does that compare to South Carolina, if you know?
Well, we're producing, we're milking about 350 cows at this time, and we're producing about 51 pounds of milk per cow. A day.
Is that good? 51 pounds?
We think it is. We think it's real good for the average. And so that gives you an idea about how much milk we're producing as one farm.
So what's the economic impact of dairy farming to these two states? Is it fairly substantial?
Fairly substantial. In North Carolina, that depending on the price and the flux, the variability of the price moves that figure up and down. But we're running in North Carolina somewhere from 170 million annually to maybe 190 million annually.
And in South Carolina, do you
know? I would think that would be fairly comparable because of the size market that's out there. And, you know, we're finding that that market has changed in relatively in the sense of producing milk for retail sales ourselves.
One of the things we're going to talk about later in the program is the political aspect of all of this and how dairy farmers in North Carolina feel somewhat misunderstood by the legislature and feel that there's not a lot of political clout that they have with Raleigh, and the people in Raleigh don't understand what the heck they're trying to do as farmers. Is the same true in South Carolina?
That's why I live in South Carolina. But the whole concept is you know that that we're dealing with the recently South Carolina started a concern about calling South Carolina farmers who are on the certified program, what we call South Carolina certified products for local farmers. Mm-hmm. That's increased. The legislature and South Carolina farmers are really uniting, I think, a lot better than they have in years to realize that there are needs to be met out there, and that the local farmer connecting to the local market is where it's really important.
And that's what the thrust of this is about, connecting to the local market. But as I understand it, a lot of the dairy products that local farmers produce don't go from the local farm to the local grocery store. They go someplace in between. Is that correct? To wholesalers? Aggregators, whatever you want to call them?
Well, the predominantly milk that is produced on farms in North Carolina goes into the co-op structure, if you will. And there are three marketing arms that we have, those being Maryland, Virginia, Dairy Farmers of America, and Piedmont Milk Sales. Those two supply processors within the region with their milk that they process.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing in 10 seconds or less?
Would you like to see more
of it or less of it?
It provides an efficient movement of the milk, but the consolidation over the years may have affected our ability to compete.
We have to take a break. We'll come back with more of our conversation about milk and how it gets to your table in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Charlotte Talks is made possible in part today by Heartwood Tree Service, now performing seasonal research-based pruning by certified arborists on dormant trees to increase storm safety and vigor. Information at 704-525-3066 or at heartwoodtree.com. Great healthcare debate continues in Congress, and a lot of eyes are on the election today in Massachusetts, which could determine whether or not there will be healthcare reform. But in the meantime, we're going to take a look at health insurance. What do you know about your policy? Are you insured properly? Are you underinsured? Do you not have insurance because you've lost your job? Or you think you may lose it because you're about to be unemployed? Well, we're going to kind of get some tips on navigating the healthcare system as it is when Charlotte talks tomorrow morning at 9.
Haiti, a week after the earthquake, an update on relief efforts, the national and international response, and what's next for the poorest nation in the Western Hemisphere. The Diane Rehm Show, Tuesday.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks, on listener-funded 90.7 FM, WFAE, your NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about milk, where it comes from, how it gets to your table, and the ins and outs, the good, the bad, and the ugly of it all, with Chester Lauder, who is the Livestock Director for the North Carolina Farm Bureau. Jim Price is the President and Owner of Lakeview Farms in Fort Mill. They are a milk producer and a milk deliverer to your door, which we'll talk about. Charlie Payne is the owner of Harmony Organics. That's the name of his farm, and he's a dairy farmer, and it's organic milk. So your milk is not part of the pool of milk that we were discussing just before the break. That goes Maryland, Virginia, and the Piedmont region. And in fact, in the break, you were telling me, Charlie Payne, that before you were organic, your daily output would be put on a truck and delivered to this vast pool of milk, which would be distributed all over the place. In fact, milk from the north is trucked south, milk from the south is trucked north and west, etc. Why? Why doesn't it just stay here?
Well, the few co-ops that control the milk supply, for the most part, move milk from one area to another to try to balance the market, so to speak, which means they're trying to move milk from surplus areas into milk deficit areas.
So they're trying to even out the prices.
Well,
and the supply.
Yeah, it improves the prices for some, and it decreases prices for others. For example, in the conventional milk market, farmers actually pay the transportation costs to have milk shipped into their area. In North Carolina, if milk is shipped from Pennsylvania to North Carolina or Ohio to North Carolina or something like that, that milk actually costs more once it arrives here than what the milk is paid, what the price that producers receive for the milk that's produced here. So that's blended together, and that has a net effect of lowering the price that local farmers get for their milk.
So why participate in it?
Because we have no other options. There are no other co-ops.
The two of you, we can, however, have found other options.
Yeah, we have, Jim's option, and the option that I chose was to leave the conventional market. And
you've gone organic, and he has home delivery. So those are two options that simply not available to every farmer did what you did, it wouldn't work, would it?
Well, there's a big market out there, and there's room for a lot of people. And so some people say, well, what if someone else got in the home delivery business in your market? What would you do? I'd say, well, welcome, because there is such a vast, untouched market there.
I did not know until I started reading for this program that this existed anymore. I remember when I was a kid, the milkman came every day or every couple of days, and we'd have a box on the front porch, and he'd put the milk in there and leave a bill, and we with an order form for the next delivery. And Thompson Honor Dairy, because I grew up in the Washington D.C. area, and it came in glass bottles, for crying out loud. You're doing that now?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not such a nostalgic thing as, but when we address this issue with people, that's the first thing to say. I remember when I was a kid, I got this. I remember the relationship with the milkman. I remember how good the milk was, how we skimmed the cream off and drank it.
Yes.
All these things, are nostalgic, but yet there's more than that. That kind of introduces us to the desire to have that return to the family life. The relationship between that milkman and knowing where that milk came from.
You gotta be careful with the milkman, though.
And well, there's a lot of those stories that may be true. You're older than you look, Mike. But the whole point that we're finding is that relationship with that customer to the beginning of that product, to knowing that happy cow produced it and that she can go see her, is...
Why did we get away from that? I mean, it was so convenient. I mean, we have these hectic lives today, more hectic than they were in the 1950s when the milkman came. Why wouldn't we want the bread to be delivered, for crying out loud, including the milk? I mean, why not? Why wouldn't everybody want this?
Well, that trend simply left because of refrigeration, the ability to go to the market in these small southern towns years ago in the 30s, in the 40s, after World War II. people began to be have the opportunity to go to grocery stores that were moving into these markets, and it's just a different way of life.
But you know, so often now you go home, you're on your way home, and you make a call, and you say, "Do I need to stop by the store?" Yeah, you got to get bread, you got to get milk. Well, if the milkman had come, I wouldn't have to stop.
You keep talking, Mike. I like it. That's exactly what I wanted you to say.
Okay. Well, thank you. I'm glad I can cooperate. If we go to the grocery store, given these vast milk pools, and we pick carton A versus carton B or carton C from this dairy, that dairy, or the grocery store brand, is what's in those cartons of milk exactly the same? Is it like gas stations where they tell you the gas is different, but it's not? It comes from the same supplier.
Now, if you move on over another section into the glass, mm-hmm. I can guarantee you, and it's got Lakeview Farms on it, that you're going to be getting a different product.
So you are in the grocery stores?
Well, in some
grocery stores.
In health food stores. Okay. Those kind of things.
But the milk, the normal milk, the grocery store brand milk, seal test, whatever else is in there, it comes from the same pool. So it's the same product, correct?
Essentially the same product, but there are some variations in the processing. And
when we talk about the pool of milk, it's a pool of raw milk, and then the dairies, whoever puts their label on it, mm-hmm. does certain things to it to make it their particular brand. What do they do?
Well, you have your pasteurization, your homogenization.
But everybody does that, don't they? On the grand scale.
On the grand scale, yes.
Yeah.
Then you have your standardization down to a skim milk, 1% or 2%, a standard milk, which is 3.5% milk. And all of those have a different flavor or a different taste to them.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up on a dairy farm also.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the third option. I sought another career
mm-hmm.
after a certain point in time in the dairy business,
mm-hmm.
which didn't show up on my bio. But fact that we've had a lot of this going on in the marketplace, and you have the products there, they get lumped together. And I applaud the local food movement for their ability to create some niches,
mm-hmm.
some opportunities there to improve maybe marketing and consumption of our dairy products.
I mean, you mentioned the fact that you'd skim the cream off the top of the milk in the old days when the milk was delivered. Does that still happen with what you deliver?
Yes, we do sell what we call a cream line product, where we don't homogenize it, and therefore the cream rises to the top, and we do sell that product, right? But we also sell a homogenized product.
What is homogenization?
It's simply where you take the molecules of the milk, you run it through a very high pressure screen or impacting nozzle, and it affects the molecular structure of the cream, and it stays suspended out in the milk. It doesn't coagulate and float mm-hmm. to the top, so it stays suspended in the product.
And you chose, Charlie Payne, to go the organic route after a certain number of years in the business. Why?
Well, initially for me it was an economic choice. We reached a point where we really didn't see much future in the conventional dairy business. And back in 2006, I was considering an exit strategy,
mm-hmm.
and I found out that there was a co-op that was trying to put together an organic pool of milk here in North Carolina. So one thing led to another, and we decided to join that pool and see what we could do. And the reason was because the organic milk was a higher value product, and we get more money for it.
How big a deal was it to switch over? Because what's entailed in ensuring that your milk is actually organic?
Well, we're certified organic, mm-hmm. and we're part of the Organic Valley cooperative. Mm-hmm.
That's the brand
that's the brand name that it's sold under. To be certified organic, you have to be inspected, and approved every year annually by an organic certifier, which is a USDA sanctioned organization. We had to go through a 1-year transition period with our livestock and a 3-year transition period with all of our land,
mm-hmm.
which meant that we had to manage organically both the land and the livestock before we could be certified and put our milk on a certified organic.
So there are quality controls in place with that label, with being certified. And you mentioned, Mr. Price, that, you know, when you buy your product, which is coming from fairly locally produced cows, Newberry is not terribly far from here, and then home delivered, what makes your milk quality milk?
Well, we understand and thoroughly believe in the organic movement and the importance of it, and our customers also. And there's a lot of play in the industry today on the word all natural. Some people don't meet a very high standard and still try to develop a market calling themselves all natural. Our position is that we try to follow in the best of our ability with no growth or production hormones, no pesticides, along the same tracks as they do with their farm. But we believe that it's a team thing where it's important to produce safe milk, quality milk under the same guidelines. But where we really differ is in processing our milk from the regular market, where we don't ultra-pasteurize our milk. We find that ultra-pasteurization kills a lot of the bacteria and the good bacteria, the good enzymes in the milk that you won't find in the grocery store milk that has been ultra-pasteurized.
Are these the same good bacteria that are in some of these yogurt products?
Absolutely. And that's one of our pluses in our marketing strategy is we tell people, you know, they're putting bacteria back in the yogurts and they're advertising, hey, that's good for you. Well, my position is, or Lakeview Farms and Bush River Farms' position is, if it's good for you, why did they ever take it out to begin with?
So why did they?
Simply, ultra-pasteurization is a way to extend the product on the shelf and in your home as well. So it's a good sale tactic in the sense that it produces the ability for the processors and the wholesalers to keep a product out there for a longer period.
Put your headphones on. We'll take a call here. 704-926-WFAE, 800-603-WFAE, which translates to 9323 are our numbers. Michael in Charlotte, welcome to the program.
Thank you, sir. Long time, first time.
Well, thank you. Welcome.
I used to be the county regulator for the milk in Charlotte-Mecklenburg.
Mm-hmm.
That program was taken over by the state several years ago. I worked in the health department. I inspected dairy farms, dairy trucks, dairy plants, and to a limited extent, the milk in the grocery stores. Going to the price of milk, you have ignored entirely federal regulation. You may remember the name William Proxmire from the dairy state. He decided what milk prices would be based on that to a large extent. There are other considerations. Energy is always the cost. Fuel costs should be mentioned in the cost of milk. I have purchased milk in Charlotte that was produced in California. The economics of the situation are such that it is possible to ship milk from Florida to most of the United States. There are treaty obligations. I don't know what the proper word is, but for instance, in Virginia, if you sell milk in Virginia, you must purchase Virginia milk. So we had the situation where milk was being imported from Virginia to Charlotte-Mecklenburg to be processed at the local plant, which no longer exists because of economics, to be shipped back to North Carolina and Virginia. I have other background if you care to hear.
Well, you can share some of it with us. I don't want to go into a long diatribe here, but the shipping thing fascinates me somewhat because it just seems to be silly to ship milk from California to North Carolina or Florida to North Carolina when, in fact, there are plenty of dairies. Are there plenty of dairies here or dairy farms here to supply North Carolina's needs? Are there none?
No.
No?
Under current numbers, no, there's not. We produce about 50% of our needs.
Is that because it's trucked in and therefore it's depressed the price to the point where farmers can't be in business?
Well, I'm not sure it's just that simple, Mike. There are a number of things that have gone on over the years with the consolidation and the price volatility. Going back to, and we've kind of shared that all of us are in that over 50 age bracket, and we remember when the milk truck came by. At that point in time, a lot of your dairies ringed those urban areas.
Mm-hmm.
those urban areas or those rings now are the urban area. We've had a lot of the dairies that have gone out of business because the alternative or the lure of the dollars for the real estate forced them to go out. One of the things that we have not seen in North Carolina and the entire Southeast is a relocation of dairies. Our dairies, once they opt out, usually go out of business completely. They do not try to relocate to a less urban area.
Is that something that's particular to North Carolina, or is that happening all over the country?
It's, I think it's particular to the Southeast.
Mm-hmm.
You have dairies, say, in California that relocate to other regions in the Midwest or out into New Mexico, Arizona, Idaho, a lot of that area in the Rocky Mountain area.
It's very difficult to relocate a dairy farm. You still have to milk the cows every day, and you're moving. How do you,
it is difficult, yeah. And it's a logistical issue, but, you know, cows can be moved. One of the things that's a little bit different about the Southeast from the rest of the country is that the entire Southeast area is a milk deficit region. There's less milk produced here than is consumed. The Northeast, the Upper Midwest, mm-hmm. and the Far West are milk surplus areas.
Why?
They produce, there are a lot more farms and dairy cows in those areas.
A lot more people, though, too.
There are more people, but there's still a big surplus of milk. In the Southeast, we have a fluid utilization of 80 to 85% most of the time. In the Northeast, the Upper Midwest, and California is closer to 30, 35%. So they try to ship milk from those areas into the Southeast. There's a great deal of competition. And over the years, the competition in the industry has tried to continually beat each other up on price. The net effect has been a lower quality product, a lot more transportation, a lot of inefficiency, and we're seeing now a reversal a little bit in trend towards doing the kind of things that Jim's doing and so forth.
I have a minute left. Any more, Michael, you want to share?
Well, part of it is economics of scale. The smaller dairy farms, a man could do a nice living and put his children through school on 35 cows. Nowadays, that takes 300 cows. That's a change that's passed over the last 30 years. And I'd like to put in a plug for public health pasteurization. There's a 50-time reduction in diseases with pasteurization over raw milk. I understand California and Vermont do raw milk, but it is a locally controlled, very neighborhood-centric almost. If you're going to buy commercial and ship it, you need pasteurization and the other control.
Michael, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. I have several questions here on email and Facebook, et cetera, about raw milk, which we'll get to in just a couple of seconds. We're in the studio with Charlie Payne, owner of Harmony Organics, Jim Price, president, owner of Lakeview Farms in Fort Mill, and also Chester Louder, who's the livestock director of the North Carolina Farm Bureau. We're going to continue our conversation in just a moment. Charlotte Talks is made possible in part today by Mariner, proud partner of Ortho Carolina, supporting excellence in orthopedics and patient care with practice management scorecards and dashboards. Mariner-USA.com. A week after the earthquake in Haiti, the Diane Rehm Show takes a look at what's going on there now, an update on relief efforts, the national and international response, and what's next for the poorest nation in the Western Hemisphere. That's at 10 o'clock. Want to remind you not to miss WFAE's next public conversation on Deciphering Healthcare. Our panel will include doctors from the Charlotte area's largest healthcare systems and a local expert in health benefits. That's tomorrow evening at the Matthews Community Center. Event details and registration can be found right now at WFAE.org, where you can also contact this program at WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks or at 704-926-WFAE and 800-603-WFAE.
With all things considered, you can turn your ride home into an escape, exploring a world beyond the headlines. All Things Considered finds stories you haven't heard, interesting perspectives, innovative ideas, and voices beyond the ordinary. Join us for something new and unexpected every afternoon. It's All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Mark Rumsey. Join us for All Things Considered, news you can trust, weekdays from 4 till 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about milk this morning. What I'm hearing with these aggregators, these pools of milk, and the fact that a lot of dairy farmers are going out of business is that more and more of the milk products that we consume are being controlled by fewer entities or larger entities. Is that accurate to
say? That's accurate.
Given the food scares that we've had in other sectors of our food business, is that a good thing to have more quantities of milk being controlled by fewer concerns? I mean, if one batch goes bad or is something, then a lot of milk's going to go bad at the same time.
Well, by being large, they probably, in a lot of instances, have more ability to do the testing and the analysis that needs to be done on the milk.
Well, you would think that the ground beef people do too, but they didn't do it.
And by dealing with a fewer number of producers, they know where those lots come from. So you don't have the risk of a number of producers being tied up into a tanker shipment. And all these tankers are monitored as they come in to the processing plants. In North Carolina, we have very strong processing. We have five major processors within North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And actually, Charlie's Milk is, I think, processed in Asheville with Milco and then redistributed back across North Carolina. We have Harris Teeter's located. Their processing is here in North Carolina. And a lot of North Carolina milk goes into Harris Teeter. And
they do their own processing.
Yes. They have a processing plant.
As I mentioned before the break, we have several emails about raw milk, which we've aggregated into one. Could you ask your guests if they know anything about raw milk, the raw milk black market that is thriving in the Charlotte region? We are one of the many families in our neighborhood who work together to buy raw milk.
Well, I know
what's up with that?
I know my guys here in North Carolina know that North Carolina said it's illegal to sell raw milk. Mm-hmm. You can put charcoal in it, I think, and sell it for animal consumption, if I'm correct on that. That's the one option.
Well, now, what's wrong with raw milk? Because in your biography, there's a story about you delivering or riding your bicycle.
Pony.
Excuse me. Riding your pony.
They have money on a bicycle.
All right. Riding your pony to let the cows out at Springs Dairy.
Right.
And every once in a while, the people at the dairy would open the spigot on the raw milk and fill up your glass, and you'd drink it. So what's wrong with it?
Well, at that time and point, all of us, as our age level, have drank raw milk. And my synopsis on that is 25 years ago, we didn't have a lot of the viruses and bacteria that we actually have now in our human lives.
Mm-hmm.
And the bovine is the same way. There's a lot of things and pathogens out there that we might not truly understand the impact of. And drinking raw milk is kind of a roll of the dice simply because there's so many things involved. First of all, who milked the cow? What are the sanitary conditions that they were milked under? How was the milk handled during the point from time it was either in a tank or bottled or for your consumption? How many opportunities is there for pathogens to enter into that milk before you receive it?
So you wouldn't drink it?
No. We don't recommend it, and I wouldn't drink it.
And if you knew that everything was good, no pathogens, no viruses, sanitation was up to par, and you drank it, what would the difference in taste, texture, quality, nutrition be?
It would not be much different from the milk that we produce and sell simply because we slow pasteurize our milk. We don't ultra-pasteurize it and bring it to extremely high temperature.
But how would it be different from what I buy at the grocery store?
It may be a little creamier. It may have a little different texture.
Is that why people are attracted to it?
I think it's a health issue. First of all, here's why I say this. The mothers that are concerned about their children and the growth and production hormones that are used in industry today to produce more milk from less cows are the issue. And they don't know that places like Lakeview Farms exist, or they're not familiar or educated enough about that procedure to say, I can have the best of both worlds. I can have a milk that's extremely healthy for me and my family, not ultra-pasteurized, where these good bacteria are in the milk, the antigens are in the milk. And I can have that safely because it's slow pasteurized. So I can get the best of both worlds.
Zani in Huntersville writes, here in Huntersville, the city fathers have rezoned several hundred acres belonging to Danny Phillips. It's now a pasture land for a herd of cows on a daily farm at the intersection of Beatty's Ford Road and Highway 73. I, along with many drivers, love to look over these black cows as I drive along. The Huntersville City Fathers approved it for retail shopping center. In Cornelius, there's a similar farm with brown cows and calves. The Cornelius City Fathers can't wait to rezone it for condominiums. It's a shame to lose the rural pastures in the South Lake Norman area. And that's one of the problems that you were talking about a minute ago, that these farms sell out because there's money to be made with the ground they're sitting on. Carol writes, I've been a moonshiner for over 3 years, going to a dairy in Rock Hill every other week, buying raw milk, cream, butter for me and a few other my friends. I won't buy store-bought again. Once you go raw, you can't go back.
Can I address that just
yes,
a minute, Mike?
Sure.
I was raised on raw milk, of course, having been raised in a dairy farm, but I have a little bit different tack than Jim. I think the biggest danger for people who want to consume raw milk is the fact that we live in a much more sterile environment now than we did 30, 40 years ago.
So we don't have the antibodies.
Kids don't play outside. They play in front of their computer, their video games and stuff, and they're not exposed to the wide variety of pathogens that exist in the environment. We wash our hands and wash again and get the germ-X out and everything else. I didn't do that when I was growing up, and I doubt that you guys did either. You know, if Mom brought us out a sandwich when we were busy working, you know, we didn't wash, we'd eat the thing, you know. I don't want to gross anybody out, but there is a possibility with raw milk that it has some bacteria that could be harmful to you if you don't have a good, healthy immune system. And one of the benefits of the raw milk is that it helps to develop the immune system and be able to fight those types of bacteria without taking antibiotics and a lot of other stuff. Another factor is that no matter what kind of pasteurization you do, raw milk has a much higher level of enzymes, a much higher level of CLAs, which is an acronym for conjugated linoleic acid, which is a very beneficial form of fat that everyone needs in their diet. And so there are some health benefits to being able to consume raw milk in it. In North Carolina, it is illegal, but it is available if you can contact a local producer and discuss it with them.
Well, put your headphones back on. We will talk to a local producer in Morganton. Paul, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I just got finished milking three Sonnen dairy goats, and I've been using raw milk now for me and my family for 2 years. My children previously would catch colds and coughs that would linger for 6 weeks or more. Now they hardly catch a cold at all. Also, pasteurized milk, if a bacteria does fall into the milk, it becomes a culture to grow that particular bacteria, whereas raw milk actually has a capability of destroying the bacteria in the milk. I've left raw milk in jars outside just to see what would happen, and surprisingly, it turns to cheese and it doesn't rot, whereas pasteurized milk becomes very putrid and nasty. So I just like to say the controversy is between the government-controlled industry of huge dairies with 2,000-plus cows and a small guy that has a dozen goats or cows is not allowed to share his product.
Any thoughts?
There is an extreme amount of liability associated with selling of a raw product at this point in time, milk. As we indicated earlier, there was a natural immunity that all of us had because we were consuming it on a regular basis. One of the things that you have to realize also is that in raw milk, if you have, and it's going to have a bacteria count, It's going to be, you know, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 10,000, whatever it is. But bacteria, if it's refrigerated, will only grow very slowly. But if you set it out, let it warm up, move up, that bacteria begins to grow exponentially.
In the raw milk or the pasteurized milk?
Either one.
The raw milk, like I said, I've left milk sitting in jars outside for weeks, and no black mold or any gray molds or anything would grow on it. If anything, just a little yellowing. So what I'm saying is it's the bacterias are everywhere, and antibacterial soaps are causing strains of bacteria that are super bacteria. And in my opinion, the same thing is true with the milk and what the other gentleman was describing about building your immunity up. That's the key to good health, is by building your immune system by exposing it to different things that are naturally occurring in our environment anyway.
So if you had a well-regulated raw milk producer, would that be one way to achieve what he just talked about?
Well, again, I think it's basically how much milk is a very monitored, inspected process. If you're grade A and you with meeting the PMO requirements, you're taking care of a lot of those concerns and issues. But again, I'm not against all natural products at all. That's what we base our whole business on. Mm-hmm. But we believe that you can obtain both worlds by what we do.
Paul, thank you for your call. I'll take a few more in a second here, but I want to make sure we don't finish this program without talking about some of the things that you folks are trying to do to strengthen your own industry. There's a program called Dairy Advantage, and
yes,
one of the goals of that is to enhance the value of milk and dairy products produced in the state and to enhance the dairy farm family quality of life. How do you do either of those things?
We're working to build a positive scenario, climate incentive in the economy here in North Carolina, in the state of North Carolina, so that we can encourage people to continue in the dairy industry. Encourage those that
When you're facing things like farmland suddenly become, of course, in this recession, it may not be the same as it was 2 years ago, but farmland in urban areas mm-hmm. becoming so valuable for development. How do you tell a farmer because you're trying to recruit people into the business and into the state to become farmers. How do you do that when they're going to buy a farm for whatever it costs and, you know, 10 minutes later, it's worth twice that because some condominium wants to go in there.
And also, we're trying to keep those that are in the dairy business, mm-hmm. currently in the dairy business also. There are a lot of rural areas in North Carolina that could still be developed as dairy industry. We have if you go east of 95, there are a lot of areas there that have been in peanuts, other crops over the years that those markets have changed. Mm-hmm. So there are very rural areas still out there. One of the beauties and reasons we had a strong dairy industry early on was after World War II, that was a way of paying the bills on that local farm. If you had a small farm, that gave you a steady income. That was the reason they sold eggs off those farms. Mm-hmm. They had chickens, they sold eggs. They had milk cows, they sold milk. It provided a stable income. Is my contention, and this is according to Chester, that actually the dairy industry has not provided the income incentive to keep dairy strong in the Southeast because of the volatility of the price. The volatility of the price has caused people to say, okay, I'm not going to fight this. I'm trying to milk those cows twice, three times a day, provide the feed and food and fiber.
But one of the other problems that you face is within your own group of farmers who I'm told, don't always want to get involved in political activity to support their own cause, and you have a legislature who doesn't understand what it is that you do or need, which fascinates me because we in Charlotte look at the legislature and think they're all completely Eastern North Carolina oriented, and that's rural farmland. So why wouldn't they understand?
Our dairy production in North Carolina was in the Piedmont. Majority of that dairy production was in the Piedmont and in the mountains of North Carolina.
Okay.
We've had a tremendous growth or influx of people into the mountains of North Carolina. That population has grown there. A lot of that dairy has been forced out. The dairy in the Mecklenburg, Gaston, Cabarrus area. A lot of that dairy has disappeared over the years.
And what? Why is it that farmers don't want to become politically involved in their own cause?
Well, it's not that they don't want to, but we're a politically insignificant number. You know, less than a half of 1% of the population, or even less than that, I'm sure. We're just, Farm Bureau does a very good job of farmers' advocacy in representing farmers here in North Carolina and across the country. But the fact remains, if somebody needs a couple million dollars to run a campaign for the North Carolina Assembly, they're not going to get it from farmers because there are not enough votes to worry about from the farm segment.
Is the number of consumers who are seeking out people like you at Lakeview Farms and people like you who produce organic milk growing enough to make this climate change over a relatively short amount of time? I have 30 seconds.
After we educate the public. When the public's educated then about the quality of the product and how the benefits of home delivery and other opportunities to receive good quality products for their families, it can be.
Same true with organic?
Yeah, and people need to demand from their grocers what they want. Most retailers are interested in providing what consumers want, so if you don't see what you want, you need to ask for it.
That's Jim Payne, who is a dairy farmer who supplies his milk to Harmony Organics. Jim Price is the owner of Lakeview Farms, home delivery of milk and milk products in Fort Mill and to the Charlotte area. And Chester Lauder, livestock director for the North Carolina Farm Bureau. Thank you all for being here. I appreciate it.